Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Before we start the show, I'd like to bring your attention to an incredible initiative by my friends at Across Rainbows called Back Off, Back Up, also known as BOBU. It's an offshoot project of Across Rainbows, an LGBTQ plus organization focused on redefining queer identity. The two initiatives work in synchronicity with each other. They are working towards a future where LGBTQ plus people not only feel confident and emotionally secure in themselves, but where they're able to feel physically secure whilst out and about in the community. In essence, they want you to be able to be out and to be you. Sadly, being different can make us vulnerable, and threats may not be immediately obvious. It's not always about physical violence or verbal abuse. Sometimes it's just a gut feeling, a sense of being stared at, followed, or just not being welcome. When these uncomfortable situations arise, having somewhere to retreat for immediate help without judgment or questions can make all the difference. And that's where Back Off, Back Up comes into the picture. If you'd like more information, you can check out the Across Rainbows website at acrossrainbows.com or check out their Instagram and social pages where you will find out more information. Congratulations to them for this incredible initiative, and I'm very happy to dedicate this season of the podcast to them. Joining me on today's episode of the podcast is Lizzie Huxley-Jones. Hux is an autistic author and editor based in London and is responsible for the incredible queer holiday rom-com Make You Mine This Christmas, which is out right now. They write joyful stories that centre around queerness and disability, and I'm thrilled they're joining me for a chat today. Please welcome Hux to the show. So whatever you're up to, this is your time to settle down, relax, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Queer I Am. Okay, hi Hux, welcome to the show, welcome to Queer I Am, the podcast. Lovely to meet you.
Thanks for having me, it's lovely to be here.
And we're going to talk about your amazing book, Make You Mine This Christmas, very shortly, which, oh, you've got a copy too, and I've got a copy, yay. How many copies have you got? Oh, in Welsh as well.
Three.
Oh, amazing.
No, is it, oh, I wish.
Is it in Welsh?
It's in German.
Oh.
No, German.
Sorry, there was me thinking it was in Welsh.
No, you were like, that would be so good. No, it's in German, but
that's amazing.
It came out weirdly in paperback in German before it was in paperback in English.
Okay.
But it's really nice. It's been doing really well in Germany. It's on all the bookshop amazing. Tables. I was on the front page of their big bookstore's website this week. So
incredible. Nice. Oh, congratulations. I mean, we've just been talking. So nice. I am like six, seven pages to go. I've been frantically finishing this book before work, after work, and during my lunch hour today. And I absolutely loved it. And we'll talk about it in a bit more detail kind of very soon. But obviously, this is kind of festive time of year. This is the winter warmer season. It's season four of the podcast. So I want it to feel a little bit cozy. I've got a glass of red wine with me right now. What are you drinking, by the way? You've got something in a mug.
What? Oh, I've just got a cuppa. Oh. I was thinking of having, like, I had a chai, like spiced chai powder that you get from Wittard's earlier. That was quite nice.
Oh, well, that's quite festive.
It's still too hot for me to drink.
Oh, okay. but yeah, so it's a winter warmer season. So I guess what I'd like to know from you, first of all, is how the festive season is shaping up for you. And what would you describe as your ultimate winter warmer?
Ooh, okay. So, well, this year is not shaping up to be the most festive.
Okay.
Only because I'm very, very lucky to be editing three books over the Christmas period. So, I've got this in May, I write children's fantasy as well as adult romance. So I've got the second book in my children's fantasy series, which is also very queer. That's out in May. I don't think we've announced the title. We probably will have announced the title by the time this comes out. I'm not sure if I can say it yet.
So, okay.
Vivi Conway, the second book. And then in June, I've got a summery romance with Tasha Gurry, who's a deaf activist and model. We've co-written a romance together. And then I've got the sequel to Make You Mine This Christmas
out in September.
And so I'm editing, and there's a sequel.
Oh my God, amazing.
I keep teasing it. I can't say too much because I haven't got a title for it, but I'm terrible at titles. But it is coming, and that'll be September. But because I've got these three books, which is a very, very lucky position to be in, I'm going to be working kind of all over the winter season. But it's, I quite like that, though, because you can get really cozy. I can put the Christmas songs on. Oh my God, the winter warmer for me this year is the fact that Cher has a Christmas album coming out. That is what's going to get me through this season. I am so excited. Like, and also Hannah Waddingham, she's got her Christmas special going on Apple, and it's all songs. Okay. I feel like the divas are going to be what are my winter warmer this year. Just like belting out a solid contralto.
Yeah,
that's what
I love that. I was speaking to Matt Cain the other day when we interviewed for the podcast, and we were talking about different kind of music and turn-offs and turn-ons for Christmas. And I said, you know, Cher's got an album coming out. And he was like, well, this is very true. We have to get on board with this. So it's downloaded. I haven't listened to it yet, but it's downloaded.
I think it came out while I was just away on holiday. So I was like, when I'm back, that's when I'm going to dive in. I'm going to get on it.
Yeah. And I love in the book as well, which again, we will talk about in a bit more detail. But I love that Dolly Parton's references some music in a particular scene. And I absolutely love Dolly's Christmas album she released a few years ago. I don't know if you've heard that. Mm. Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it? It's such a good one.
Yeah. I listened to so much of her Christmas music during writing. So come up with a book, this is going to sound a bit wanky, but I really think about the music and the music that comes to mind when I'm writing, and the songs that make me think of characters. And so I really heavily build playlists, but also I find it helps me get into the characters themselves. And I feel like Hav is such a kind of Dolly in some ways, because she's got a big heart, she's got big hair, she's got big boobs. Kind of channeling that warmth and love of Dolly Parton kind of really helped me instantly get into Hav's mind. So I love all her songs. Oh,
she's incredible,
angel.
Isn't she? did you watch Christmas, is it Christmas in the Square on Netflix, the special she did?
No, not yet. I've saved it for this year.
Oh, it's 3 years old. You need to watch it. It's really good. Yeah, it's brilliant.
I know. I was gonna watch it last year when this was already out. I was gonna watch it the year when I was writing it, but I was like, I kind of want to save it. Because the thing is with writing Christmas books and working around Christmas is that you can get a bit I can watch this for work, but you've got to save some things that are just for you as a treat.
Pleasure.
That's going to be my treat for this year. I did watch a Hallmark movie that was I think Christmas at Dollywood. It was not great, but I got to see a lot of footage of Dollywood, which was very exciting to me.
She has such a diverse career, doesn't she? She's an incredible human being. Like, she does. I love Dolly. She's just amazing.
Yeah.
And this book made me feel so festive, like so festive. But what is your biggest turn off this year? Because like we all have our moments, don't we, where we kind of get to a point where we're like, okay, I'm done with Christmas now. What is your ultimate turn off for Christmas? Or do you not have one?
Oh, I don't know if I have one, you know. Like, I feel very lucky that for Christmas, I have a lot of friends and family who are like, oh, you can go. I don't have any obligations. It's like, if I want to go do something that I'm invited, that's lovely. And like this year, I had to say, like, oh, I probably can't do very much because I'm working so much. So I feel like it is kind of like a nice time where I can just like turn off my brain. Maybe I don't have one. Oh my gosh. Oh, I know what it is, and I've only just thought about this in the last year. I think my turn off is the concept of Whamageddon, because I think actually we should be listening to Wham with great joy whenever we want. Why are we denying ourselves this pleasure? That's my turn off.
have you seen the Wham documentary on Netflix? It came out quite recently.
No, I haven't. No, I'm gonna, yeah,
super,
I'm
good
to watching that.
It's brilliant. And they just you're right, because it's almost like looked down upon in some kind of way. And actually some of the songs and the performances and actually their rise to fame and stuff and the challenges they had is so interesting. I love that. I've got two friends that I went away this summer for an extended career break, and I was in Gran Canaria for 12 weeks, and I had two friends come and visit me and they took some really cool pictures, and honestly, they look like the early days of Wham. It's just so funny. So I had to send them a little picture of
this is
Wham, this is you. And I don't know if they quite get it, but to me, it's what it looks like. So love that. I love it. So Make You Mine this Christmas, just absolutely wonderful. As I said, I've still got a few pages to go, but I've just been kind of like, oh my God, what's going to happen? So for anyone who hasn't read the book, and obviously we want people to go out and buy the paperback, can you tell us about the book and the story behind it?
So Make You Mine This Christmas is about a girl called Hav whose life is really not going the way she expected it would. She doesn't really know what she's doing. She goes to a Christmas party. She's kind of dragged there by her friend, gets a little bit silly, and snogs a guy under some mistletoe. It's a really bad snog, to kind of try and be like, oh, this mistletoe is dying. Let's, you know, give it its last rites. Let's send it out knowing that it's done its duty. And they are overseen having a terrible snog by his ex-girlfriend. And so to kind of save face for him, she pretends that she's his new girlfriend. And due to a series of misunderstandings, that news spreads like wildfire. And because Hav has nothing better to do, she agrees to be Christopher's fake girlfriend for Christmas. On the way down, she meets Kit in a bookshop in a train station, which is St. Pancras Station. And they've got the big display. Mm. Oh my God, I can't wait to go see that. And she's like, wow. This girl is amazing, but she doesn't manage to get her number. They have a meet cute that's books everywhere. She doesn't get her number. And she's like, never mind, I've got to focus on this fake dating. Gets to Christopher's family home, who walks in the door, the girl from the bookshop. She's his sister. And so it's kind of a messy, can't escape each other. Is it feelings or am I just attracted to you? Also, I'm trying to keep up a terrible fake dating scheme. Yeah. And it's only set over 6 days. It's a very short time period. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to write something that felt like the big, chaotic, fun, romantic Christmas movies that heterosexual couples have. Mm-hmm. I wanted something that felt like The Holiday or... I'm trying to remember all the Christmas movies I love now. In my head, I was like, Love Actually. I'm like, no, I don't like Love Actually. What are the ones that I like? But my point was, I wanted something that felt like all the good Netflix ones that we've got, because I just wanted something joyful where no one has to come out unless they want to, where it's like a safe place to just read a queer romance. And so I feel very, very lucky that I got to write something like that, because there really wasn't very much traditionally published last year, because last year the ebook and the audiobook came out in the UK, and we got a special hardback edition that was with Illumicrate. There's like three or something of those left on the Illumicrate website in case anyone would prefer a hardback. But when they're gone, they are really gone. Yeah, and then the paperback came out this year, and luckily we've had some other brilliant ones from Talia Samuels, which is just about to come out in paperback and audio. And so we're getting more and more queer, cozy stories, but for years before then, we just didn't have that. I just feel very lucky that I got to write something so silly and fun. And
it was so fun. And, you know... It really is. And it's funny. There's some real moments where I really laughed out loud, and especially Otto and Esther, you know, the family that Christopher and Kit belong to. And, you know, there's just so many moments where it is just hilarious. And there's also moments where you just think, oh my God, how are they going to pull this off? Like, you know, it's crazy. But I think what's really beautiful is the relationship that, you know, Haf and Christopher form, even though they're fake dating. There's this really beautiful, like, allegiance between them both, and they're both really want to support each other. And again, they build this friendship from nothing, just purely out of goodness and someone else caring for someone and wanting to do a nice thing for them. And it was just so wonderful to read. And it's made me feel so festive, like, just all of it, like the champagne popping, the dinner cooking, the presents, the snow, all of it. And you're right. I think it's really lovely to read a queer novel, which is joyful and is festive and really celebrates queer relationships in all their forms. And I definitely think this did that. So it was just amazing. What's the feedback been like about the book?
Thank you. It's been really good. Like, I always say that a book is a success if one person from kind of the group of people that I would love to write for says they liked it. And that's my metric. I don't really read reviews. I don't, because it's a quick way to make yourself feel doolally as a writer, especially if you're, because you're always working on the like three books ahead by that point. And it's like, you can't change it. And it might prevent you from writing more stuff. But it's been wonderful. And like, so for those who haven't read it, Kit, who is the love interest, she has hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, can't even say my own disorder, which I have as well. And it's a disorder where the collagen in your body, in every tissue you have, is too stretchy. It's kind of like chewed chewing gum. And so it can cause dislocations and migraines and dizziness and all sorts of very weird, disparate things. But I had so many lovely responses from people who have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome saying that they never thought they would see themselves as the object of love in a romance novel. And I was really glad that they were very happy with that. And I had a lot of people who, so have, is not said she's autistic on the page, but I realized as I was writing her that she was autistic, like I am. And I think sometimes when you write characters, you don't really know what you've done until you've done it. And I was like, oh no, she 100% is. She doesn't have a very good internal compass of what her decision making is, and that's partly because she doesn't know that she's autistic. And that really, like, people always ask if you are your main character, and I would say that's something I've taken from myself and changed into a whole different person. She's very different from me. And I put a note at the end just saying, you know, if you felt like you connected to have she is autistic, she'll find out eventually. She actually finds out between the two books that she's autistic. And, you know, I wanted to say to readers, if you felt like you connected to her in this way, you know, that might be why. And I've had a lot of people reach out and say that that representation really mattered to them as well. And, you know, when I'm writing, I don't think necessarily like representation first, but I am thinking about the types of characters who might look like people in my life. And so I was really glad that people responded well to both of them as queer and disabled women, because I feel like disability in fiction has many problems. Whiteness is a continued problem, but that's not for me as a white person to necessarily solve. But straightness is a problem. Like, we don't, and also seeing us in romance. So I'm glad to have put out a little bit of that into the page and into the world.
Yeah.
Oh, I just realized that my laptop was not actually charging. There we go.
Don't want to lose you halfway through the interview. I think it's, I think that's really important what you've mentioned. And, you know, I think there's, I mean, growing up, for me especially, there just wasn't the characters that I wanted to see in books or in TV. So when we finally get that, it's like, wow, we've been waiting for this for so long. And I always refer back to the program Glee, which I know has lots of, I have very mixed feelings about Glee now, because of all the kind of stuff that's come after it, you know, the bullying, the kind of the unfortunate deaths, the all of it. It's been a really difficult program, I think, after the event. But I think that the one moment that always struck me was in season two, when Blaine and Kurt find each other at school and they hold hands running down the hallway. And I remember looking at my husband thinking, oh my goodness, like, that just wasn't our experience. And not even was it our experience at school, but we couldn't see it on the television. There was nothing represented. So I think it's really great now that we have books and we have TV out there that sees queer people, disabled people being reflected back, and, you know, they feel seen. I think that's incredibly important.
So much. I think quite a lot actually about the, I feel like there was a scene quite early on where I feel like Kurt's dad wasn't totally on board to start with, but then there was like a moment in season one where he was like really protective of him, and I remember watching that and being like, wow, that feels different. And I think that it is weird to hold up Glee as something that meant something, but it did, because we did have so little. It is very funny going back and watching like Mike do a deep dive on it. He's done a couple of videos on Glee, and it is very bad when you watch it, but then you also remember all the good stuff, like Santana and Brittany, like, my goodness, that was like revelatory. I mean, to me at the time,
it was 2009 when it first came out, wasn't it? So if you think about it, actually season two would have been 2010-11. It was quite I left school 10 years before that.
I think I was in uni from 2007, and I think it was on when I was in uni.
Okay.
And I was still so closeted then, like trying to be like, no one clock me. I'm the most heterosexual cis woman you've ever seen in my life, which was wrong on several occasions. But like, I can remember watching that and being like, I'm interested in this in ways that I cannot explain. And then before that was like Sugar Rush on Channel 4, which Channel in 4. Wales we used to have Channel 4 programs air like 3 hours later on a channel called S4C or S4C, and so Sugar Rush would air at like 12:45 on like a Tuesday, and I would be watching it with like the TV volume so low, being like, I don't know why I care about this program so much, but I'm gonna watch it.
You need
really
to
intently and not tell anyone I've watched it. And like, I think a lot about that, and I think a lot about queer people who can't necessarily be open and out, but need those kinds of stories that kind of speak to them. And I think that we need a variety of stories. You know, I think it's important to have dramatic stories or really emotional stories and sad stories and beautiful stories. But I'm a big goofy person. I can only write very silly comedy stories. That's what I really want to write. And at the moment, I mean, my middle grade, my children's fiction is not so funny. That it's a little bit scary. But I think we need
that. Absolutely.
Comfort.
I think it's
really
important.
And it's comforting to me to write it.
Yeah, of course. And I think it probably is, you know, something about making the art that you didn't have. And of course you end up putting yourself into it without realizing it in some kind of way. Even if the characters are really different, you're probably writing it for you, because it's like, actually, what joy do I get from this? Like, you've got to feel passionate about what you're doing. I mean, something we spoke about earlier is the fact that, you know, you've mentioned you're autistic, non-binary, queer. How important, I mean, you know, we talk about intersectionality within our community. How important is it for you as a writer to be so open about all of those things and express that within your work? Because it's, as we said, it's really, really important. So what does it personally mean to you?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I want to preface it with, I think it's not easy, but I think it's easier for me to be open because I'm a white person. And I'm also a white person who's usually read as a woman. And I think those two things give me a certain level of privilege that means that I'm read as a non-threat on any of those forms. And so I think that that gives me a lot. It puts me ahead in a way that makes it safer for me to be honest. But I think that I spent so long in my life, like, hiding who I was and repressing who I was in lots of different ways. So for those who aren't very familiar with autism, it's a neurodevelopmental disability, we call it neurodivergence, that can affect how you interact with the world and other people. And so that might be sensory, like I've got a ring light on in front of me and it's draining my little batteries just because it's like bright, but that's okay. No, it's fine. It's like, it just drains it quicker than it might for someone else, right? So that's okay. And like, I love to talk to people, but I have a smaller social battery as well. So it's like I run out of that energy quicker. But part of being autistic is things like stimming. So that's, it's called like involuntary movements. So it might be like flapping your hands when you get excited, or jumping, or making high-pitched noises, or like rocking, or I don't know where I've put it now, but somewhere, here it is. I've got like a little whale toy that I've been fiddling with this whole time because it helps me think, to be like playing with something or doodling or whatever. And those behaviors are a lot more stigmatized because it's like, oh, you're doing something a bit weird. And so I learned over time to hide that. And I learned over time to hide my burgeoning queerness. And I learned over time that, you know, dressing like a little boy is cute when you're 8, but when you're 12, people start to feel differently about it. When you're 14, people start to feel really different about it, and they will tell you. And so I think because I spent so long squashing myself in all these different ways, that when I found out I was autistic, I was like 26, it was kind of a release. I was like, do you know what? It makes it easier for me to say and this and that. And so for me, I don't think I could be authentic in my writing without being authentic in myself. And that comes from a place of privilege. But it's kind of freeing because I don't feel like I have to hide. And also it means that when people say, like, do you need any accommodation? I will say it, and I will hope that they do it. And I'm less afraid of asking for what I want. And I think part of that is being in my mid-30s. You know, I think we all get more confident as we get older. But I think that that, like, unmasking on all these different levels is a really, like, key part of that. And I think a lot about the little me. You know, because of the kids' books, I'm going into schools a lot. I spent all summer going into schools around the country. And, you know, I don't necessarily like give my pronouns up front because you never really know going to into a school what the vibe is going to be like. But I remember going into a school in Birmingham. They had a huge pride display.
Wow.
And so in the start of my talks, I always tell them I'm autistic and I talk about disability because a lot of kids don't see disabled adults. But at that school, I was also like, also I'm queer, also I'm non-binary. And I could see a few little faces in the audience go, and it's just like knowing someone else can say it can be important in that relationship building, in like, just those kids knowing that there's adults out there that might be like them in some ways, if not always. telling kids that I'm autistic is always amazing, because what I do is I tell them I'm autistic, and then I say, does anyone know what autism is? And the kid that puts their hand up and they're like really like waving their hand around is usually the autistic kid, and they say, they give me a little definition, they say, and they always say, and I would know because I am too, and I always get to say, all the best people are, and like the smile on their face when I do that, it's, you can't buy that, like
heart melting.
It's just like, yeah, just reaching across time and just telling kids, you know, you're all right, you'll be great. It can be really hard, you know. I write for kids in the 9 to 12 age group, and that is a, you know, end of primary school, start of high school. Oof, that is a tough time age. To be a little weird person, you know, like I think it's when people start clocking if you're a neurodivergent, they start clocking if you're gay, you know, like I think it's a tough time. And so in the kids books as well, there's a queer romance, there's a romance between the non-binary character and a girl character, and there's other romances that are like creeping in, and Vivi has two mums, and so there's lots of like incidental queerness in it, which is purposeful, in the same way it is in Make Your Mind, really.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
But yeah, sorry, I've gone off on a tangent.
No, you haven't.
I love both of my author hats so much. I feel very lucky.
I think that's wonderful, though. Yeah, and I think it's wonderful, though, that you are able to share your full self. And I think that our best work is really evident when we are fully authentic, because, you know, people can spot when people aren't being authentic or they're holding something back, and I maybe think that then holds their career back or who they are back, you know. I definitely think, you know, for me, I mean I'm 40 next year. I started this podcast 2 years ago, always wanted to be creative, was always trying to do something but never had the courage to do it. I was always scared, I'm not good enough, you know, all of those kind of things. And I think I got involved in Pride back in 2019 in Suffolk, where I lived. And I met loads of different queer people, and we organized a Pride where about 4,000 people came. It was just wonderful. And it just got me really interested in queer history and, I guess, my heritage, you know, as being part of a queer community. Yes. That was really important. Whereas before that, I was probably very fortunate in that I was passing. I was married to my husband. We owned a house. We had sensible jobs, living a relatively heteronormative kind of life. And almost like being comfortable in our bubbles, you know, because I think if you've been bullied at school or you've almost been kind of like, you know, you've stuck out, you do whatever you can to blend. So when you then feel that you're building a comfortable life, you think, well, let's not rock that boat. Let's just kind of keep that going. But when you do rock the boat and you do start to feel that authenticity, it's just wonderful. And I'm so glad I did, because now I'm living in Brighton, surrounded by a queer community, making a podcast, now I'm gonna start writing a book. It's like, it's amazing, you know. Yeah, what comes out when you are authentic, I think, is just truly magical. So I really applaud you for doing that up front. I think that's incredible.
And that, you know, I think that's wonderful that you have connected that opening of self to that creativity. I think that we can be, I think part of being a creative is being vulnerable and being honest in different ways. And it's not always just being like, here is everything about me all the time, although that is who I am as a person. I mean, I've been on Twitter since 2009, like, you know, I can't shut it up. But like, I think it's like so freeing, and freeing to explore that in your art as well. Like, you know, kind of through this, I've inadvertently come out to a lot of people who didn't necessarily know anything about me anymore, because I linked accidentally my Instagram to my Facebook about 6 months ago. No, longer than that. It was like a year ago now, for the kids' books. And I was like, oh, do you know what? That's fine. I'll just keep it, because you know, you never know where people have ended up moving to, and so it might be useful for like announcing events and stuff. And then when I was like promoting this one, it's very obviously gay because there's two women on the front. I don't think the chemistry is sisters, or that, like, that's thrown me a few times when I look at books. I'm like, oh, two guys, two girls, is it a gay? No, they're siblings. and so like quite a few people have then been like, oh, this is great, well done. And I'm like, oh yeah, now you know. And if you turn to the back, it's like my pronouns are there. And it's, so it's been kind of like ripping the plaster off all at once to everyone I've ever known. But I think that's been kind of freeing in a way as well, to just be like, yeah, there we go, now everyone knows.
Absolutely. Yeah, what in terms of pronouns, I'm always really interested for this topic, because I identify in the non-binary camp. For me, I always felt like I didn't kind of fit somewhere. I was always kind of questioning and always like, I just don't feel this way, but I don't feel this way. And for me, non-binary was an opportunity to bring all the different facets of myself together, or nod to the fact that actually I don't fit in the binaries. But I guess for me, queer is kind of like the umbrella, it encompasses everything, my identity, sexuality, who I am, how I live, how I, you know, express myself and that kind of thing. But I use they, them pronouns, but also he, him, because for me personally, I was called he, him for such a long, long time that it's one of those things where I'm not offended if I'm still called he, him, or they, them, or Andrew. Yeah. But I think I also appreciate that for a lot of people, pronouns are really, really important. And I think that, you know, some people are really scared of pronouns because they're really scared to get it wrong. And I always think that if we all just open our eyes and our ears, and we just kind of, we're respectful, and if we get it wrong, we apologize and we move forward, then hopefully that's okay. Yeah. But I'm just wondering where you stand on kind of pronouns and what they mean to you, and actually what's been your journey with them, because I think everyone will have their own kind of journeys with them as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I think I feel very similar to you. Like, professionally, I only use they, them, and that is a personal choice, because I kept getting listed on lists of like women writers, great 10 best women writers, and I was like, this is lovely, but it's also giving me the biggest hit of dysphoria. Like, I find that, like, woman, lady, it just it makes me feel very dysphoric, because I'm like, oh, you really have a different visualization of me than I have of me. whereas words like auntie, like, I'm auntie to all my niblings and to my friends' kids, but I quite like that word, because I feel like it's a word that transcends just like mother's sibling. I think lots of people can be aunties.
Absolutely.
I think it's a nice word. And I think it's, I personally prefer it to uncle. They were like, do you want to be auntie or uncle? And I was like, I think auntie is nice. It rhymes with my name. Auntie Hudson. Auntie Lizzie.
Yes.
I'm like, that's cute. But for me, so I'm very strictly they, them for work, which is sometimes a problem. You would be surprised by how many people in writing will do an interview with me and then write it up, and then it'll be she.
Oh, really? Wow.
And I'll be like, oh, can you change this? Everyone has been great and changed it very quickly, but it's not great to have to write that email. Mm-hmm. I'm really lucky that for the kids' side, I have an amazing PR team, EDPR, who do all the PR for Microsoft, and they're extremely quick at spotting it, and they're amazing allies on that front. And on all fronts, in fact. That sounded like I was saying like only that. No, they're brilliant. I love them. But you know, yeah, I don't mind it. I think the thing for me choosing they was choosing joy, choosing euphoria. It makes me feel good to be they them. And so that was my choice. And that's kind of like, to me, Lizzie is very much the stage name. I don't particularly feel connected to it in any way, except that I know it's my name. Whereas Hux is part of my surname, but it's also what everyone used to call my tide. So my father's father. And he was a very like gregarious man about town, always involved in committees and very chatty. And I think we were very, very, very similar in personality, and so I really like it because it's like it reminds me of him as well.
Not
so
to him,
like multi-layered. But yeah, I think there's an amazing meme that it's hard to explain a meme in words, isn't it? But it's like talking about gender with cis people, and it's like a teaching assistant showing a child Lego blocks, and then talking about, and then it's like talking about gender with queer people, and it's like a picture of two philosophers. I feel like with other queer people, like sometimes they'll throw in a little he. Like most of my friends will refer to me as like a boy, and like that is very like lovely and like inclusive, and they kind of get it that there's this more masculine side to me than you might read from my appearance or my voice, and that makes me really happy. And I think that, like, I joke about like the cis people, talk about cis people with gender, you know, blocks, but also I think you can also really tell when cis people care. Like, there's a huge difference between someone being like, she is, and someone being like, oh, she is, oh, sorry, they, like, there's a huge difference in intention and
someone trying.
I would rather, yeah, and also just someone knowing you and someone, you kind of, you get a vibe very quickly if someone respects you as a person and how you present yourself and feel about yourself, and someone who does not and actively will not do that, like the vibe is very different. And so I don't mind if like people throw in a she when they know I'm a professional they them, because it's almost always an accent. They're always trying, and you know, depending on what your whether English is your first language or cultural backgrounds you're from, it might be harder for you to throw that into your lexicon. So I don't hold it against anyone, but I do remind them. I'm definitely more strict in text. Like if people are writing, I'm like, you know, it's in my bio, it's everywhere,
it's listed. They could kind of research that, I guess. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But like in speech, like we're saying things almost unthinkingly all the time. And I think that just being like, oh no, they, and then just move on, just like don't make a big deal out of it. Like the worst thing is when people are like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, and like forgive me. I'm like, I don't, just chill out, just let's keep going, let's move forward.
I
because
agree.
Then I think it's more about the person than you, and that's I don't want to deal with someone's emotional fallout just because I'm the only trans person they might know.
I think that the thing is as well, it is about, you know, if people make mistakes, they say they're sorry and they move on. But I think the fact is that when someone recognizes something and they're trying and they actively say, goodness, I've got that wrong. Actually, recently I was having a conversation with someone and they said, oh, just want to let you know that I may forget to say they, them, but if I do, please forgive me. And I just said, Please don't worry. For me personally, I'm okay with all of the pronouns. It's a personal preference, or it's something that I kind of, you know, it resonates with me, but actually I'm also quite flexible with it because that's just how I feel about it personally. But I thought that was just great that from the outset they said to me, this is a situation. And again, it's the conversation is happening. And I think that's a really, really good thing. That's so important.
And it's them being vulnerable with you as well. Mm. And that's what I think this is. It's about vulnerability. It's about connection. It's about saying, well, you know, you might read me one way, but I would like you to interact with me on a different level. I would like you to adjust your expectations.
Absolutely.
And that's what they're doing. That's what they're asking for. My, you know, I'm a disabled person. I have brain fog. I get pronouns wrong for my cis partner. I will muddle things up in my head. You know, I have a seizure disorder, so like things get real scrambly in there sometimes. And so I'm just like endlessly patient with someone, especially if they say, I might get it wrong, but I'm trying. I'm like, that is all you needed to say, is that you're trying and you are thinking about it. Because that means you care. And that means you're vulnerable about the fact that you're trying and that you care. And I have endless respect when someone is honest like that. And, you know, obviously that shouldn't be the end of it. We should always be trying. But of like, course. I really appreciate when people are vulnerable like that.
Absolutely. Definitely. It's keeping the conversation going, isn't it? I think that's a really, really important thing. Thank you for sharing that. Because I think, you know, there are so many different conversations happening about pronouns and about gender identity and sexuality. And I think it's just really important that, you know, it's not a done conversation. We just keep talking about it. And I love hearing other people's experiences as well. So thank you for sharing that. I do appreciate it. It's great.
Oh, you're welcome. Like I said, I'm an open book. It's like, if I've not said it here, I've said it on Twitter like 4 times. So it's all
I love
good.
That. Amazing. Well, the book is out now, isn't it? The paperback copy of Make Your Mind This Christmas. Yes. So everyone needs to go out and get this. I'm going to be promoting it all over my socials because it is just amazing. And I'm definitely going to finish the last 6 pages after this call as well. I promise.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, before we go, we'd love to do... Sorry, say that again. What were you going to say? I think there's a small delay. There was a small delay on the call the other day as well.
Yeah. I think I interrupted you. You go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm going to go on to a quick fire Christmas round with you. But if you've got anything else to add, please do before we do that.
Well, I'll just say that, Make Your Mind This Christmas is out now in paperback, ebook, and audio in English. And it's Weihnachten, nur du und dich in German in ebook, audio, and paperback. It's a big paperback in German. In English, it's read by the wonderful Helena Kerr, who is so funny. There will be a sequel out next year with more to come. I can tell you it's about Christopher, and it is also gay. So you get to see where his story goes.
Oh, because there was something I picked up on in the book. So, yes. Oh, this is exciting. Okay, I love this. We have to chat about it next year when it comes out. We'll do another conversation.
Yes, I would love that. That would be so fun.
That would be so good. So good.
Let's go. Quick fire.
Let's do a quick fire round. So, yes. Best present you've ever received?
Oh, my God. The best present. I'm so bad at quick fire.
It's so funny. It's so funny because when I do quick fire with everyone, they're always like, okay, let's go. And then I do it and they're like, oh, I can't think of anything. Honestly.
Oh, actually, I know what. It wasn't for Christmas, though, so I feel like this is cheating. But my partner got me, or maybe it was for Christmas last year. My favourite book in the whole world is Sabriel by Garth Nix. And it's a book about a girl who goes into the land of, like, the dead and, like, walks the rivers of death to try and find her father, who has gone missing, and he's the apples, and his job is to ring the little bells and summon the gates and pass through into death. And my partner bought me the, like, Illumicrate did a special edition with new art and numbers.
Oh, wow.
And he got me that, the first two books of those for me. And that was a really great present because they were the books that inspired my children's series. So there we go. That's a great present. You can edit the bit where I'm like panicking so I sound quicker.
No. Yeah, completely. No, he did very well on that. That's amazing. I love that. That's awesome. The best present you've ever given?
No, I don't know how to answer that because I don't know if anyone likes
In your opinion.
In my opinion. Oh my god. Oh, I got the kid a few years ago, so I have two nibblings, and I got them, I always get them stacks of books. Every now and then I try and get them a shits and giggles present, so it's not always like, oh, Auntie Lizzie bought more books by all these. The kids always think I know every author in the world because I'm always buying them my friends' books, and they're like, oh, they're your friends' books. I bought them these things that were like these weird little like eggs that you made lab experiments with, and then it like fizzed and exploded, and there was a tiny little creature inside, and they were obsessed with them. They had a whole little row of them, and I was kind of jealous because I was like, oh, I would actually like this. So there we go. That's the best present because I wanted it.
Third egg delivered from Amazon the next day.
Yeah.
I love that. What is your festive tipple?
Ooh, what do I like? I love a whiskey. I really like a really peaty whiskey. And I have it like no ice or anything, just nice warmer. My friend's dad does a like cracking Christmas Eve cocktail where it's like orange bitters and spirits and a little sugar cube. And I had it at their house like 3 years ago before the pandemic. I'm strongly considering just like turning up on Christmas Eve. They only live down the road and being like, hi, can I have a cocktail?
You got any more of those drinks?
But yeah, no, I'm a whiskey drinker, which is kind of, Hav makes a comment about how useful it is to talk to dads if you know anything about whiskey, and that is from me because that is absolutely true. In fact, yeah. When I was in Wales on book tour, I just got talking, somehow within 2 minutes I got talking to another Welsh guy about whiskey, and we talked about whiskey for like a 10-minute car ride. My PR person was like, how do you know so much about whiskey? And I was like, it's just really useful to talk to middle-aged men. One of those things I've memory banked. Yeah,
I was going to say, when you said whiskey, I was like, yeah, there's a lot of whiskey in the book. So, yeah, I understand that now. That's amazing. Your favourite holiday song?
Oh, I'd have to say, look, it's got to be Mariah. She's so good. But I will say Make Your Mind This Christmas is actually a musical reference to two different songs. The first one is a song that she did with Ariana Grande, which is called Santa's gonna come and make you mad this Christmas. And also, yeah, but the song I was listening to, which was my theme song for the book, is Make You Mind This Season by Tegan and Sarah, which is the opening song for The Happiest Season, I think, or it's like one of the major songs on the soundtrack. So the title of the book is a nod to those two songs. So
amazing. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I love that. That's great. I can understand it now. Yeah. There's just so many to choose from, isn't there? But yeah, those are both really good songs. That's incredible. And finally, what is your favourite holiday tradition?
Pigging out and eating as much Lebkuchen as possible. But on Christmas Eve, we kind of stole this from my sister. We quite often watch It's a Wonderful Life, and I'll make a Nigella Coca-Cola ham and Nigella's like mac and cheese recipe from her Christmas book. And I'll make massive portions of that. There's only two of us in this house, and we'll watch that. And I think that's probably my favorite tradition is doing that. And just knowing that, you know, you can go cozy to bed. I really love that film. Like, it's just, but it means that we're always like, hot dog, hot dog. But I don't think we did it last year. I couldn't remember. Time flies so much. I couldn't remember what we did for Christmas last year. But I think we were at my sister's. So I'm like, oh, let's do that this time. That would be nice.
Do you know, and you've cooking, just made me feel.
I love cooking.
You've made me feel really nostalgic because at the year I got together with my husband, which was 2005, he made me the Coca-Cola ham by Nigella as our first Christmas meal. And so you've really just made me go right back to that time, because I remember it all being cooked in Coke. And it's, there's such a funny story, because I washed up and I remember telling a friend, I was like, oh, he made this amazing ham and it was really beautiful and it had Coke in it and a tea bag. And she went, a tea bag? I went, yeah, I don't know why. I said, but it had a tea bag in it and blah, blah, blah. And then I told him afterwards, he was like, no, no, I just made a cup of tea and then threw the bag in the empty pot afterwards. I didn't cook it with a tea bag. So I was like, oh, okay, I got that one wrong.
Just like a little bit of flavour.
Yeah, completely,
yeah,
completely.
Yeah, like, I've done her like ginger. She's got a ginger one that's also nice, but you can't beat the Coca-Cola one. I just think it's the best. I have also done it with cherry Coke before, and that's
good.
Oh, so in case you want a little mix yeah. on it. Yeah.
Have you ever made her gingerbread or ginger cake, Jamaican ginger cake stuffing?
Yeah. Oh, no, not the stuffing. Like when I was in uni, I got a bit obsessed with how to be a domestic goddess or whatever that one's called, because I found it in one of the student houses I moved into, and I made every single recipe from it.
Oh, amazing.
But I haven't made that. And now I'm like, oh, I'm very tempted. But quite often we'll get our meat from this really nice butcher's that's in Yorkshire, and then they deliver it. It's called Farmersons. And the last, like, since the start of before the pandemic, I think we've been getting our meat from them. And quite often it comes with their own stuffing in it. So I never think to make stuffing. Now I'm like, now maybe I just need to make some little balls and just make it.
You make a loaf. Treat. Make a loaf and then slice it and then have slices of it. Yeah. And then you can have it cold with like turkey and sandwiches. And seriously, it's really good. And she has
That's
a Christmas
what I'm
special.
Look at now.
you need to do it. And she has a Christmas special coming out this year as well.
I saw she's filming.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Really exciting.
I just think she's so great. She did a talk about sandwiches with Jonathan Nunn and Rebecca May Johnson, who also write Vittles. I don't know if you read that. It's a like newsletter subscription about food, and they have some amazing writers. They did a talk at the British Library. I think you can just watch it on their website now, all about sandwiches and the importance of sandwiches and how to make a good sandwich. And I tell you, it was one of the best hours of my life, just watching Nigella chat about sandwiches. Go and watch that. That's queer culture, watching Nigella talk about sandwiches.
Completely.
It's like somehow heterosexual, but also queer.
Very queer.
No, it was so wonderful.
I love that.
But now I'm just thinking about making sandwiches with all the things that her recipes are. So I think you sold me. I'm going to have to look that up.
You've got to do that one. Seriously, it's really good. Thank you so much, Hux, for being on the podcast and for talking to me and sharing everything about the book and about you. And it was just such an amazing conversation. I really do appreciate it. And I definitely want to speak to you next year when the second book comes out. It'll be just a thrill to read it, but also talk to you about it as well. So thank you so much.
I would love that. That would be amazing. And thank you so much for having me. This is, I feel like
Christmas.
This is my first. Oh, yeah. Thank you. And you too. I feel like this is my first like proper PR thing for the book. So it's like, oh, I'm really in Christmas mode now. So thank you so much for
having
me.
Now's the time.
Merry Christmas.
Now's the time. Watch Nigella. Have all the good food, the whiskey, Christmas mode, fairy lights.
Yes.
Yeah, everything. Sounds incredible. Look after yourself, and I'll speak to you very soon.
Speak to you soon.
Oh, sorry.
No, don't worry.
There's a delay.
We're just getting so excited.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, as we say in Wales, Nadolig Llawen, so that's Merry Christmas.
Oh, lovely.
And have a lovely time.
You too. Look after yourself and all the very best.
And you too.
Thanks so much. Cheers.
Yay.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. Check out the others from season 4 when they're released. And why not browse through season 1, 2, and 3? There are so many incredible conversations for you to enjoy. It would be great if you could give the podcast a like. A 5-star rating would be even better. And share it with your friends. Let's get everyone joined in the conversation. You can follow me on Instagram. My handle is @FluiActually. and check out my website, fluieactually.com. Until next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.